Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Drop the Gloves with Wichita Thunder head coach Malcolm Cameron. Drop the Gloves is a weekly program that gives you, the fans, the opportunity to ask the Wichita coach questions about the Thunder, hockey, or sports in general, or just seek the coach's wisdom about life events that are going on. In this week's episode, the coach talks to us about the exceptional play of Mark McMillan. He shares his thoughts on 66 goals through the first 7 games for Adirondack. And a listener is excited about the fact that she got the coach to be a little embarrassed. So let's get right to Drop the Gloves. Let's welcome back Coach Cameron again. Coach, do you have team updates for us?
Yeah, actually we've got 3 players coming in from Bakersfield tonight. Jamie Dornbosch being returned, adding Evan Poli and Greg Chase.
Wow, so the last two have not played with you before?
No, they're new arrivals to our lineup here tonight.
You add Benjamin Diodé-Favelle to your defense. What are you feeling about him that makes him a good fit?
Well, we'll wait and see if he's going to come here first. We made the trade on the notion he wanted to continue to play in the ECHL. He's a French national who hasn't been home in 5 years, and he's been offered an opportunity to maybe go back to his hometown team. His thought was he married a girl from Elmira, New York, and Wichita is a long way away from there. So if he's going to be away, maybe have an opportunity to go back home, see his parents and his brothers and sisters who he hasn't seen in a while. So we're on a little bit of a hold with him here today.
That's understandable. Barring injury or call-ups at this point, are you feeling like the team is at a point that you're satisfied with where they're at? Are there areas you still want to address?
No, I like our team. It's a constant work in progress. It's a different piece of the puzzle every day. Dana Tyrell's out with an injury. Dornbosch has been up. Some other guys have filled in. We've got a couple of nagging injuries for guys that are question marks for the weekend. So getting Dornbosch, Poli, and Chase into our lineup certainly makes us a different dynamic. And we'll have to see what we look like on Thursday.
You're getting exceptional play out of Shane Sterrett and Joel Rumpel at this particular point. Are you going to continue to alternate the two of them?
I haven't decided what the plan is for the weekend. Obviously, two of them, one of them will get 2 games, and one of them will only get the 1. So we'll have to wait and see. Tomorrow's practice, Thursday's practice goes, and then come up with a plan.
It doesn't look like you have a losing choice either way, though.
No, I mean they're both good goaltenders, and part of our commitment to Edmonton is to develop Shane and get him games. So there's a possibility he'll be the guy that gets 2 or 3 this weekend.
So far, the power play, 3 for 21. This is such a skilled group. I'm gathering you would think that they would be shooting about 20% on the power play. Is this just kind of learning the chemistry of one another, or is there something you're seeing?
Well, actually, 5 of the 21 power plays have been 30 seconds or less. So that stat's a little bit skewed. So you go really full power plays, we'd be 3 for 16. We've had a bunch of irons, so a little bit of puck luck. We're in the game. Like the one in Kansas City the other night, we had 1 power play. You kind of need to have more than 1 in a game to have success, at least 3, and then you kind of judge it from there. But I'm not concerned about our power play.
Mark McMillan is one player I wanted to talk about in particular. His career high is 8 in a season. He already has 4 for you this year. Is there something about his play where he's just really clicking right now?
Well, he was a big scorer in the NCAA at North Dakota, which is the premier program in NCAA hockey. He was just put in a different role in the American Hockey League, which was as a checking forward because he's a good defensive player too, and really wasn't given an opportunity. But, if he had started at this level, he's a 25-30 goal guy.
One guy I want to talk about in particular too is Matt DeBlau. It seems that his second season, wherever he's been, has been where he's really stepped up his game to the next level. So I'm assuming this is going to be a really good year for him. But I'm wondering, from the vantage point of an AHL team or even an NHL team, is this a situation where they would see him as a guy that would have to develop into a role, they'd have to kind of stick with a couple of years to see the advantages? Or could he be a guy that steps in right away and is able to play for a team and be a success?
Well, he's got elite speed, so that gives him a chance to play in the top 9 of any American League team. I think the first step is just getting him an opportunity to go up in a call-up. And, Matt's a lot more comfortable. You're always more comfortable after your first year with a team, whether it's junior or college or pro. So he's certainly comfortable. He's been really good. I've moved him kind of in and around the last couple of games off the Platts or O'Brien line. Just to balance things out a little bit. And the thing about Matt is, with that speed, he can play any role.
Would you see it as a beneficial thing for the Edmonton Oilers organization for him to, like, move up for a short period of time and come back so he gets that acclimation?
Well, they've got so many players right now. That's why we're getting these two new forwards coming down, because they're bogged down with trying to get guys to play. So there's really no need for Matt in Bakersfield. But that doesn't mean he won't get an opportunity to go somewhere else.
This weekend is your first time for this year that you have three games in a row on consecutive nights. What do you try to do that changes up the schedule, or is there anything you do at all of differently?
Yeah, we decided to give them a day off here kind of midweek. Normally you give the guys off, like they had Sunday off, practice Monday, we give them Tuesday off. We'll practice Wednesday, Thursday, so we thought getting some rest early in the week, keep mentally sharp here for the two prep practices for the weekend.
Well, let's head to fan questions. We start with Dan. He says, you carry 18 players on the team. I assume that is three forward lines, so nine players, three defensive pairings, six players, and two goalies. So what does the other player do? What is his role?
Well, actually, we that's what we dress for a game. We usually dress 10 forwards, 60, and two goaltenders, but we actually carry more than that. We're going to be carrying 23, 24 players here for the next week or two. So there'll be guys going in and out of the lineup, just depending on injuries and who we play. But that combination could be 11 forwards and 5D, just depending on the health of people and the call-up situation. So, but if you go with 10, a lot of the time you're using that guy as a mixture, you know, with different lines and to prove a spark. If somebody's not going that night, you move that guy into a regular line. So that guy's got to be able to provide energy, offense, and good defense.
I would take it too. We've seen in a couple of games this year where we've had guys hurt in the first period, needed a little time to recuperate. I take it that guy's kind of filling in that role.
Absolutely.
Well.
And typically it's a guy you use a lot in your penalty kill too.
Next up is Mike, who says, Adirondack has 30 goals and has given up 36 through 7 games. I like wild open hockey, but 9 goals a game, that seems a bit much.
Well, yeah, that's I'm not sure. I don't get a chance to watch the East very much, you know, especially the Far Eastern teams because we don't play them. But yeah, that's kind of a skewed stat. I imagine it'll settle down at some point in time, but that's an awful lot of goals.
Reed asks, he says, the East doesn't seem as competitive as the West. Is that the way it looks to you?
It's hard to say until you start playing, you know, more of a head-to-head situation with the Eastern teams and the Western teams. It's really hard to say.
Do you scout at all other teams, or are you just focused on kind of upcoming opponents?
I'm just more on upcoming opponents. Unless there's a player I'm interested in maybe trying to acquire, then I'll watch some of their game film so that I can see if that player's a good fit for us.
Matt would like to know, didn't you say that you signed a 2-year contract, and if so, are there negotiations to extend that contract?
I can't really comment on that part right now. That's kind of a private matter.
I was going to say, that's a little far off anyway,
yeah.
If you haven't gathered, so... Steve asks, he says, you don't seem to have a bruising kind of player this season who is looking to mix it up like James Melendi did last year. Is that by design, or we just haven't seen it yet?
Well, we've got a lot tougher players than that here. I mean, Guillaume Lapine was an elite American League heavyweight, which James was not. You know, James was a combatant, a willing guy, and a real team guy. But to mix it up at the American League level, he just didn't have the size or strength. Lapine gets a lot of space on the ice because he's done it at the higher levels and done it very well. We've got lots of guys that are more than capable. Marc-Olivier Crevier Moran, Sam Thibault, Travis Iwanyk had 3 years of 100 penalty minutes in the American Hockey League. Dyson Stevenson's one of the toughest guys in this league. So we've got lots of capable guys here. It's more than one guy.
I would assume that it's other teams don't really want to battle with them then.
Well, yeah, like we played Saturday night in Kansas City, won both altercations pretty cleanly, in my opinion. So I think we've got really good team toughness, and you know, it'll be tested throughout the year.
Bill would like to know, he says, I find Tampa Bay to be the most surprising team in the NHL this season. They have such a good group of scorers, but seem a little small. I wonder your thoughts if that hurts them come playoff time, where you have to grind out games.
I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, you know, I think skill is such an important part of the game. And, you know, when you're a goal scorer, you know how to find room out there. Stamkos isn't a small player. Tyler Johnson is. But those guys just seem to always be able to find open ice and put it in the back of the net. So do I think they're a Stanley Cup contender? I guess that remains to be seen. Tampa wouldn't be my choice as the contender right now.
Brad would like to know, he says, because of the costs involved that you mentioned last week, do you think that hockey has a limited appeal?
I think it probably has a limited appeal in terms of participation, but not necessarily spectator-wise, because there's nothing, there's no sport here in North America that can, you know, play at the speed a hockey game is. An NHL game, players skate way faster than anybody runs, so it's faster than basketball, it's faster than football, it's got the physicality of football without the stoppage in play. You know, you think about an NFL play, even if it's a long pass, it only lasts seconds, where you can have 6, 7, 8, 10 minutes in hockey without a whistle, you know, and the physicality that goes along with it is awesome.
I couldn't agree more. Let's see, we're talking next is Aaron, who says, what are your thoughts on all this kneeling in protest?
Me personally, I'm not a big fan of it. I think there's other ways to protest. As I said before, I think that we're very fortunate to live in a country where we're protected by rights and freedoms, and the people that laid down their life to make sure that we have these rights and freedoms, I think get bent out of shape, and by rightfully so, for the lack of disrespect for the country. If people are willing to put their life on the line to give us these things and protect us, I think we should think of them as well. I think there's other forums where you can protest.
Next up is Andre, who would like to know, do you think it was a mistake to not allow NHL players to go to the Olympics?
I think for the growth of the sport, for sure it is, because everybody watches the Olympics. And you go back to, you know, when hockey kind of took on a new turn back in 1980 with the U.S. team winning the gold medal. That was really a huge growth for hockey here in the United States in the beginning of non-traditional markets. So I do. I think it's the biggest platform that we can sell our game to the world, and I think it's a shame.
Shyla asks, who were the players you admired growing up the most and why?
Steve Yzerman was definitely a guy. Early on in his career, he was a real offensive player and realized that that's not the way that they were going to go and win a Stanley Cup in Detroit. And he became a 200-foot player and learned to play both sides of the puck. And that's when they started to win cups. And he was a great captain and a great role model in the community. I love the way he played the game and the way he approached it. Obviously, Wayne Gretzky, just for his brilliance on the ice. And probably the other guy would be Mario Lemieux, just to have that size and elegance about his game and the speed and the skill. I don't think there's ever been a player in the National Hockey League that has that blend of size and skill. I don't know if we'll ever see it again.
Chris would like to know, because of how the action moves so quickly, I wonder what is your focus in coaching? Clearly you're not spending as much time on set plays, or am I wrong?
Well, we have systems and structure in place for, you know, each situation in the game, but they're also, it's not football where everything's pre-planned. It's a reactionary game. So, you know, we practice a lot, and my focus is on what's the other team doing to counteract what we're trying to do, and it's almost like a chess match. So they make a change, we make a change to counterbalance that. They make a change, we make a change. And a lot of it is, especially when you're at home, is getting the matchups on the ice that you want, that you think is in your team's favor.
I think fans don't really get to see. I've seen in practice where you're teaching a system related to where a guy should be standing when a player's in the corner or has the puck and somebody's right on top of them or something.
Yeah.
So it's really about positioning.
It's a lot about where positioning and where you should be when you're forechecking, neutral zone forecheck. A lot of it is when you don't have the puck, how you can get it back more quickly.
Don would like to know, how much did last season make you hungry to win this year?
Honestly, not any different than any other year. You know, I'm driven to win. That's a part of my personality that, you know, even when I've had 50 win seasons, I've come back and wanted to win just as bad. It's like anything. You want to have success. And, you know, last year was a blip in the road as far as my career has gone. So I think sometimes, you know, those types of seasons, you know, humble you, or at least I heard they did, and you realize how fleeting winning and losing is and how hard it is to win. I mean, people forget that the other team's trying to win too, you know, and winning and losing is very difficult. If winning was easy, everybody would do it all of the time.
I would wonder too, is that I think some people get the idea when you win, you don't have hunger to win again.
Well, it's kind of like I graduated with an economics degree, and there's this thing called the theory of utility, whereas my professor used to liken it to beers or cheeseburgers, where you eat that first cheeseburger, and boy, oh boy, it tastes great, and you want to have another one, but each one you have afterwards doesn't quite taste as good, or you're not quite as craving for it, and it's a little bit, that's human nature, so it's like that with winning too, but I think we've got a pretty motivated group here, and they like the feeling around the locker room, so I haven't seen any sign of that changing.
Next up is Ian. He says, I think you said last year you were a big fan of Slapshot, the movie. Do you prefer the crazy fighting style of the game, or more speedy finesse style, or something different altogether?
Well, I think you got to have a little of both. I mean, you know, obviously the skill and the speed and everything like that is the way hockey is trended now. But I still believe that there's a part of the game that needs the altercations out there. It's a way for players to police the action on the ice themselves and make sure the guys aren't taking liberties on your skilled players, and also creating momentum changes and space out there on the ice. And it's such an emotional, fast game that sometimes it's just two guys that didn't like the play and they want to go at each other. So I'm a big believer in all of that. But it'll never come back to where it was in the 80s and early 90s, where, you know, things are preset off of face-offs and, you know, stage fights, as they're called. You're never going to see that again.
When you see that in games, what is your thought about something like that?
Well, first of all, you're not allowed to fight off a face-off anymore because you're kicked out of the game. So the players know that, so you won't see it anymore.
Our last statement comes from Lindsay this week, who returns from last week, and says, I think my question about you being the sharpest dresser in the league made you a little embarrassed. You seem like such a confident guy. It is good to know you have a shy side.
Well, I definitely have a shy side. My wife would tell you that. I've never, ever considered myself a sharp dresser. A capable dresser, I guess, would be more to the word. But I got to say that I give my wife all the credit. She picks my suits out on game day.
Excellent. Thanks, Coach.
Thank you very much.
We want to thank Coach Cameron for joining us on Drop the Gloves this week. If you have your own questions you'd like to ask the Wichita Thunder coach, please send them to us at MalcolmCameron@MinorLeagueSportsReport.com. That's MalcolmCameron@MinorLeagueSportsReport.com. Please have your questions to us by Sunday evening so we can give the coach a little time to review them before we record the show. I'm Rob Pannier, the managing editor of the Minor League Sports Report, and we'll see you next time on Drop the Gloves.